hour.
Burning
Sam,
out
we're supposed to play Kiss music
alone
every time we have the Lawyer Extraordinaire on.
I'm sorry.
That's okay, Sam.
Representative of the Kiss Army.
You're fine. We're good.
Which is not a gang, according to the FBI.
That's a good thing.
Have you looked into that, to that, to the case with the Juggalos?
I haven't yet, but I'm going to.
You should. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that, because I think it's a pretty fascinating story.
Yeah, a lot of that comes down to the fact that there were several crimes that took place where the perpetrators were wearing Insane Clown Posse like makeup, and it happened on numerous occasions, and so there's a very weird sort of cultural thing when it comes to Juggalos, and then on top of it, the FBI got involved. Yeah, you would really, especially
with
your Kiss,
check it out with your
Kiss fandom, you would find it interesting.
First they came for the Juggalos, then they come for the Kiss Army. Right?
That's right. That's right. Well. Although I will say Kiss is a better band than Insane Clown Posse.
Hey, you know what? It all depends on what you're in.
Yeah, it's all relative. Right? It's all relative.
So last week, Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton and the Republican legislative leaders laid out their legal cases with court briefings in their veto fight over funding. New arguments were filed on Friday. You and I chatted a little bit about it online over the weekend. Pretty interesting angles that both parties took in their legal arguments.
Yeah, and further proof that the decision, the court's order previously, was not the final order. I mean, this was a briefing schedule, and now these are the briefs that are being filed with the court. And, you know, it's addressing primarily a specific issue as to whether or not how to resolve this inconsistency, as both sides acknowledge it, in the constitutional inconsistency in the line item veto and the governor's right to use the line item veto to line out, items in appropriation bills, and the fact that, you know, constitutionally the citizens of Minnesota are entitled to a legislative branch.
Well, before we get into the details of this, just up front, the requests from the high court for legal opinions from both sides. So the governor's response was yes, and then a 23-page memo. The legislature's was no. Just on that, does that signal anything to you?
What they were asked to brief on is whether or not the court, the judicial branch, has the right to order funding for the legislative branch. And that's where the two sides are arguing opposite sides. So the governor's legal team is arguing that this is akin to what the courts do when there's a government shutdown and determining essential functions and being able to fund at those levels.
Right. This is not a government shutdown.
No, it's not. And that's what the legislative legal team points out is, number one, the court shouldn't be doing that in the first place. That they just shouldn't be this. They have the power of to appropriate funds under law, under the Minnesota Constitution, belongs with the legislative branch, not the judicial branch. And they said, you know, they kind of keep coming back to what it reads to me is the governor's legal team is doing everything to try to come up with giving the court alternatives to ruling that what he did was unconstitutional. You know, here, you can still fund them this way, you know, and the legislature's legal team is pointing out, no, you cannot. You either have to, if the court has already reached the opinion, which they did in that brief opinion, that 6-page opinion they did issue, that the citizens of Minnesota are entitled to a legislative branch, then the only thing you can do, the only option you have, is to declare the governor's line item veto of the legislative branch's funding as unconstitutional.
So,
and they bring up that line from the, remember we talked about, from their opinion about you can't use a constitutional power to achieve an unconstitutional result. Mm-hmm. They hit that, the legislature's lawyers hit that hard, you can't kick the can down the road. You have to rule on this. You have to decide that what he did was unconstitutional, and that's the only way we can have our funding restored.
The angles took in these legislative briefs are different because there's some distinct differences in the arguments that they set forth in front of the Supreme Court and in these briefs. And is that just a reaction of trying to take the questions that the justices asked and the order that they wrote and figure out where their heads are at and trying to sort of persuade them in that direction of where they already are from the legal teams?
I think so, and I think that this is because they are – they are being asked to address a specific issue, which if you recall back, go back way back to, I mean, I forget how many times we've talked about this. This is becoming like a Star Wars saga. We're like episode six now. You know,
nice.
But if you go back to the, when the district court, had this case and there was a stipulation and an agreement to fund the legislature through October 1st. Part of this goes back to that, you know, should the court system be allowed to, you know, to basically order that fund the legislature be funded. So that's what they're going after here is, can the Supreme Court uphold that? Can the Supreme Court say, can the Supreme Court send this back to the district court just like you, you know, and have the district court determine just like you would in a shutdown situation what the essential functions of the legislative branch were and just fund those?
What I gather from reading the coverage and some of what Dayton's attorneys wrote, Dayton's side appears to want the Supreme Court to go ahead and fund the legislature, right?
Mm-hmm.
And treat it like it's an emergency funding,
mm-hmm.
right? Even though it's not.
Right.
They want to treat it like it's an emergency funding to fund the legislature, but not strike down the line item veto.
Yeah.
Have the court, that way he can have the line item veto.
Mm-hmm.
He can still say that what he did was perfectly fine and reasonable and the court's going to fund him anyway. So at the end of the day, it didn't really matter, but he gets to keep his little line item veto of their funding, his petty little reaction to their funding. It seems like he's given up on the idea of getting them to come back and negotiate those policy items.
Not necessarily because he's at his lawyer's brief talks about, you know, this idea of, you know, funding the essential functions. So they mentioned, you know, oh, there's this travel amount, there's this for water coolers. They're talking about cutting the legislature down to the bare bones.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's still in the back of his mind and the governor's mind, there's probably an attempt to, we'll restore that other funding if you get rid of these policy provisions, which I signed into law.
Right.
So I think that's what the argument they're making is fund it, but fund it at a bare bones level just to make sure that it can perform its essential functions.
I really hope that the legislators, when this all is said and done, or maybe during this process, I hope they hammer home the point of just what a complete and total waste of time all of this is.
It is.
All of this time spent in court, all this haggling, all this discussion could have 100% been avoided. They could have figured out all their problems right now if Governor Mark Dayton hadn't decided to be so vindictive and petty. That's all that it came down, that's what it came down to.
If Governor Dayton, even beyond that, if Governor Dayton actually negotiated in good faith with the legislature on these items and on these bills, then none of this would have happened. Because don't forget, every policy item that was included in those bills, the governor's team was part of those negotiations before they ever got to his desk. And he could have said then, No, don't put that in there, or I'm going to veto it.
And the legislature's brief brings that up, that this was part of a negotiated deal, all of these items, and it was my understanding, including their argument is even the policy items he had agreed to, because if you recall, going back to the time of that deal, there were things that the Republicans gave up as part of that deal. Nick Zerwas's bill about the enhanced penalties for protesters that have already been convicted of, you know, disturbing the peace for blocking freeways. That was thrown out as a trade-off for something else. There was a couple things that they horse traded on and gave up. And so I always was befuddled by why he made such a big deal about this, because my understanding was he had agreed to all these things. If he just didn't agree that maybe he was going to, like, maybe he has his fingers crossed behind his back and he was going to, you know, strike something when they got to his desk. I don't know. But I'm confused as to why they are having this fight over provisions that I thought his team had agreed to.
Looking at the Republican side, or the legislature's side of this argument and the briefs that they filed, they don't want the court to initiate this quote unquote emergency funding.
Right.
Because then that would uphold the veto. They essentially want the Supreme Court to veto the veto, right?
Right.
And that way they get their appropriations back. If the court agrees to just the emergency funding,
mm-hmm.
then they are in a sense saying that future governors can use this tactic. Now, I don't think, and you would know better than I, but I don't think the court would go that route, because the last thing they want is after every session, every budget session, right, we have the two sides coming back to the Supreme Court going, tell us which one's right.
Right.
You know, we need you to fund us again, please.
Yeah, I think that that argument is a stretch, that the court should be doing this. And if the legislature's brief makes the point that you have the court now, you have it having to determine what are the essential functions of the legislature. And this is sounding more like lawmaking. And this is something that should be reserved for the legislative branch.
Right.
So yeah, I think that there's, you know, even though, you know, as I think some people we've discussed it, other people have brought up, four of the seven justices were appointed by this governor. I think in the back of their minds, they're thinking down the road, what if we have a governor that doesn't like, you know, something the judiciary branch mm-hmm. does and just not fund it? And it's strange because the governor's brief talks about, you know, well, this has happened even in the judicial branch during shutdowns. They have to fund the essential functions. And I know that the justices, Chief Justice Gilday in particular, doesn't like having to, you know, run the court system on a shoestring. That's denying people access to justice. So I don't think that's the best argument to make for them in front of them that, well, you guys have been through this, so you can,
right.
you know, I don't think they particularly like that. So I don't think that that's a winning argument for them.
On the question of motivation, I would be curious to hear people's thoughts. 651-989-5855 or use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. Do you think that when they were going through the process, that this was something that they had intended to do, that Dayton had intended to do this all along? Or was this something where after it was over and they decided this wasn't going to look good for Dayton, what he had negotiated, they decided to pull this out? I know Dayton's been pretty upfront saying that, my understanding is saying that he made this decision afterwards, but I'm wondering how much of that is true and whether or not they had intended to utilize this veto all along.
I do take him at his word that it came after the fact, John. I think that if you recall the veto everything movement that was going on at the Capitol.
Yep.
I think that this was in response to that he was kind of throwing the base a bone, so to speak. I mean, even though he is leaving office, he still, you know, is concerned about his party's chances next year. So perhaps this was him, you know, picking a fight, you know, in with an eye towards 2018. So I think that's where this grew out of. I don't think he went into it. I don't think he went into it thinking that I'm just going to agree to this deal and then veto everything out of it.
Looking ahead, so the governor and the legislature, they're going to file a joint memo on the state of the legislature's finances today. Mm-hmm. The legislature legal memo does suggest the state has enough money in reserve to keep things running for 60 days, the House for 120 days, if the Supreme Court allows Dayton's veto to stand.
We're going to have a legislature for at least 120 more days.
Mediation set for next week. So where are we heading?
This is just proceeding like, you know, the Supreme Court is now and is just kind of guiding this thing. They're going to have the mediation. I don't think anything's going to get solved in mediation. I think that both sides have their positions on, I mean, you know, in other words, if something was going to get solved in mediation, one side or another is going to have to cave on the underlying issue, which is these policy provisions. I don't see that happening.
How long will mediation go on? Do you know? Is there any sort of
standard? Typically, mediation may take it's in a standard civil matter, like I've handled them before. You may take a day's worth of mediation and give a shot at it. I don't know if this
see this one lasting like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, governor comes in and Dalton Gazelka come in and they're like, are you gonna change your position? Nope. You? Nope. All right. We tried.
We'll have a conversation. You're right. It may last a half day or maybe a day, but I don't see either side changing their positions on those policy issues. Unless the governor comes in and wants to throw other stuff at me. If this horse trading, like you said, like I mentioned before, if he comes back and says, we'll give you this, but you take away this and this, mm-hmm. maybe. Part of the problem is that, you know, the governor has the authority to call a special session, but he can't control what happens in those special sessions. Right. So his other thing at this, which mentioned the legislative brief mentions, is he wants to call a special session so long as they already pre-agree to do everything he wants them to do.
Well, they should just negotiate with the governor the way the governor negotiates with them. Tell them that, yeah, we'll call the special session, governor, and then we will, we'll do all these things you want us to do. Have them call the special session and then just go on and do whatever you want.
Yeah. We had our fingers crossed behind our back.
Right. Andy calling from Forest Lake. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning. As always, I've loved these type of arguments. And when you get to a side where it's very politicized, you always need to take the argument to the next level or to the extremes. And my extreme in this argument would be, what if it was a Democrat federally controlled Congress and Trump just said, you guys don't have your money.
Right.
I'm gonna pull your money. How would the country react to it? I mean, I would hate the idea that a governor or president or anyone of that executive branch could just take any bit of the laws and say, I'm going to defund anything I want to defund. That's horrendous. That's a power that one person should not ever have. And that's why it was separated in the first place. And why the court would think it's okay for a governor or the executive to be able to do that is mind-boggling to me. Because that's just opening a can of worms. Because if they okayed it in our lower court, then they could do it in the bigger court. They could cite our court decisions.
It is tyrannical. I mean, it's nearly tyrannical, the move that Governor Dayton made. And, you take this argument, you apply it on the federal level, and imagine, just for a moment, if President Trump did this to Congress, especially, like, say, after the midterms, like hypothetically, let's say Democrats take over Congress, and President Trump reacts by completely taking away their funding, that would be called a coup.
Yeah. Well, if you remember, guys, about 25 years ago, it was in the, after the Republicans took over the House under the Contract with America, they had the line item veto in those 10 provisions they had in that contract, and they passed it, and it was struck down as unconstitutional. At the federal level, the president was not allowed to have the line item veto. This is only a state thing, so it's already giving a state executive a heck of a lot more power than the federal executive branch. So in my opinion, I think that at the end of the day, I think that they're going to say, yes, you can use it, but you have to use it judiciously, and you can't do this. You can't use it this way.
By the way, real quick, taxpayers, so far, we won't know the final tally on the bill all the way around, but so far, the legal bills for the governor's office, $245,000 through the end of August. The legislature doesn't have a bill yet until the matter is settled, but the lead attorney is charging $325 per hour. So, yeah, it'll come with a nice hefty price tag when all is said and done.
Wasting our money.
Maybe they can see if the court would order the governor to pull some money out of his South Dakota Dynasty Trust to pay for that.
There should be a loser pays a component to this.
Should veto the bill from the attorney. No, I'm sorry. Reject.
I want to start line item vetoing my appropriations. Yeah, we're not paying for that anymore.
No, sorry.
Jeff O'Brien, lawyer extraordinaire, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thanks, guys.